I've been working on this issue since my sexual assault back in 1991. So we're looking at 23 years where basically the military has done very little towards preventing sexual assault in the military. And by prevention, I mean actually prosecuting those people that are the perpetrators of these crimes. And when the crimes continue to become exponentially more prevalent among our ranks, and military members start to connect that what happened to them happened to somebody else, happened to somebody else, and the numbers become more and more outrageous, I think it bears out that there really is no progress in fighting this epidemic, and there's no reason why any military member should feel like they could trust their command to take care of this issue.
Now, you were, of course, one of the whistleblowers, as well as one of the victims of the tail hook, which I remember was a sensational story at the time that it all came out. And some brass heads did roll at that time. But it sounds like you're saying the lessons learned at that time really didn't stick.
Yes, that's correct. And when I look back at how things unfolded by me bringing my complaint forward about my assault at tail hook, and in fact, the military upper level brass that did eventually, nobody was necessarily fired or lost their jobs, but they had to retire, and they were retired with sometimes less of retirement benefits at a lower rank than they would have anticipated. Nobody lost their job. Everyone retired with full retirement benefits somewhere along the lines of their career. I left with nothing, and most sexual assault victims end up leaving the military very broken and with very limited benefits. And what I look back and see how things, how justice was played out, and that those military leadership positions were under scrutiny, I believe, more for getting caught in not handling my complaint and making it, as you said, a sensational story, then they were actually being punished for a lack of leadership and a lack of conviction in removing perpetrators from the military. That's how I view historically the way things went 20-some years ago. And nowadays, I think military leadership, if they're being removed from the chain of command, if they're being removed from their jobs, they're still retiring with benefits, and they're still being punished for what I would say getting caught, not because they did something wrong, but because they got caught.
When you think about all the years of these types of scandals, why do you think progress hasn't stuck, or reforms that people promised in the time and the year or two following tail hook or now, why have they not stuck through the generations?
Because they've never really done any legitimate reform. What we have is over the years created a reporting procedure. And by reporting, I mean that the Pentagon counts how many people can finally come forward and file a complaint of sexual assault. And the Pentagon writes lots of reports about the environment, the dynamic, and the prevalence of crime. But they have never really done any reforms that result in prosecution of those crimes. So they're going to keep reporting, and they're going to keep the status quo because it's easier for them. And I also believe there's an underpinning, a foundational flaw in the way the military views sexual assault. So they've really felt, as long as we kind of keep track of these numbers in some kind of innocuous way that doesn't put too much of a burden on anybody in the military, then they feel like that's enough of a reform. But what we're looking at now is finally legitimate legislation from Senator Gillibrand's amendment for the Military Justice Improvement Act, and on the House side, Congresswoman Spears' act, that is probably in front of the House today. Those are real reforms where Senate and Congress is forcing the Department of Defense to actually enact changes to the way the military justice system prosecutes these crimes.
We were speaking with Paula Coughlin, board member of Protect Our Defenders and former naval aviator. Now, there has been legislation from Claire McCaskill, and there was some disagreement among even women in the Senate about what they should do with military justice. So it sounds like you feel that legislation that's already passed doesn't go far enough.
That's correct. The McCaskill Amendment that went into the Department of Defense Authorization Act really acts, it has no concrete reform in how the reporting is handled and has no legitimate changes with teeth, with the actual ability to prosecute and prosecute a perpetrator and protect a victim. So if we loop back to this element of trust that seems to be eroding in the military over this issue, or perhaps never existed, the McCaskill Amendment does nothing concrete to evoke an environment of trust. The barriers that are still there for a victim to come forward are not alleviated through that legislation. And there's such significant loopholes through the chain of command to let a perpetrator go, to let a perpetrator go without scrutiny, without investigation, without an investigation that leads to prosecution. So the status quo element of the McCaskill legislation is really, it's inane if you're trying to change the environment and actually remove the criminal element out of the military.
Paul, I want to bring it back to this issue of trust and what it means in particular to female service members. But back in the time when you were serving in the Navy, you were limited in the types of roles you could imagine yourself in. But now the Pentagon has told the services to open up more and more combat roles to women. How does this issue of the sexual assaults, how does that impact how women view their careers in the military, do you think?
Well, for me personally, when I see that the field opens equally to men and women to serve their country, and the roles that used to be limited to men only now are open across the board, ultimately, I think these armed services are going to understand that the most qualified and professional person is going to serve regardless of gender. And I also think that that is going to elevate the level of professionalism. It's going to elevate the level of leadership. And when you start seeing women becoming leaders and commanding officer roles and all the way up through the chain of command, I personally think it's going to really elevate what our command readiness. Now, some people argue that that is really putting women in harm's way. And it is. When I chose to serve the military, I knew that I was walking into a high-risk occupation. But I think it's very short-sighted to think a woman going into an environment where they are equals and partners and serve their country in every capacity, just as a man, somehow is related to sexual assault and increases the risk of sexual assault for a woman or a man. I disagree. I think that you're going to have a component, a criminal element, that remains in the military as it does in society. And limiting a woman's ability to serve her country doesn't change that. So I think it is actually it's vital to the military readiness and level of professionalism that we've got and that we hope to have in our military by opening all fields to all men, all women, whoever's qualified. And then possibly by raising that level of professionalism in our leadership, it will affect the ability to prosecute criminals in the military. So it's kind of a loop around, but I think it's important to see that the ultimate effect is going to be in a positive way in eliminating or removing that element of the perpetrator out of the chain of command and out of our military.